Beef Council's, our main job is promotion, education, and research. So those are the three things we focus on. We represent ranchers where they can't be, right? You've got things to do. You've got places to be, cattle to sell. You got to be at the sale barn, or you got to be, you know, breaking ice in the winter or whatever you got to do. We're paid to be in the places that you can't be. And so we're at community events. We're at schools. We are trying to always break down barriers to entry of beef, telling the story. We're on social media now too, a lot. And the importance is to create demand, right? To create and maintain demand. Beef demand is at all-time highs right now. Mm-hmm. In fact, the prices are even driven by high demand. People are choosing beef, continuing to choose beef. And a lot of that is we try and encourage it as Beef Councils to continue or to get people to continue to choose beef. So
we want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in beef calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Control the cortisol surge and control your drug costs on your inbound cattle. Make the 21-day SHOT Show a thing of the past with QFA 2000. Boehringer Ingelheim puts cattle first with innovative health solutions, vaccines, and care for your herd. Visit bianimalhealth.com/cattle.
High-producing cows need safe, healthy environments. Healthy environments starts with Jones Hamilton.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Brandi Buzzard, and it's my pleasure to bring you the latest trends and issues from the best and brightest minds in the beef industry. Today, we're having a little bit of a fun episode swap, and we are joined today by Carol Ann Romo, Executive Director of the New Mexico Beef Council, where she works on behalf of ranchers to strengthen and grow consumer trust, grow beef demand, and ensure producers are represented with integrity and creativity. We're doing a host swap or a guest type swap with her, the podcast that she hosts that we're going to be talking about in the upcoming minutes. So excited to have Carol Ann on here. Should be a wonderful, exciting episode. So with that, we're going to jump right in. Welcome to the podcast, Carol Ann. How are you?
Thank you. I am doing well and excited to be here.
Yeah, well, we are excited to have you. This is something different that we haven't done really a lot of before. So I think this is going to be fun to do. So, but to start off with, you know, bring us up to speed on your background, how you got started in the beef industry, in the cattle industry, and then kind of your career so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't grow up around commercial agriculture necessarily. I grew up showing 4-H and competing in rodeos, junior rodeo, all of that. So we were, benefiting from commercial agriculture and part of the culture in a lot of ways. But I didn't know as much about it growing up necessarily. My grandpa was a farmer, but my dad and his brothers all moved to Hollywood to be in the movies when they were making Western movies. Yeah, so they were Hollywood cowboys, and then we were rodeo cowboys to start with. And so that was kind of, my childhood. And then going to college, I found out I could take classes about cows, and I thought that was pretty dang cool. And so I had, got a minor in animal science, a major in journalism, and kind of figured out that the best route for me was agriculture marketing with that degree combination. And so I worked for Tartar Farm and Ranch Equipment starting out. And that was where I really learned that the journalism skills, that toolkit, and then the agriculture love really, really met a really neat career opportunity for me. So I started with Tartar and with their marketing agency, really, but was on just with the Tartar as a client. And then from there, worked for a family friend that actually owned a restaurant, which is kind of fun now that I work for the Beef Council because I was on the restaurant side for a minute. And then went to Rabo Agri Finance with I was field marketing manager. And so managed a lot of the marketing for the Western United States, which meant a lot of beef, a lot of cattle. So then came to New Mexico Beef Council. Didn't exactly know that that was a real job where I could represent our state, represent the beef industry, and work for ranchers promoting a product that I know and love. And so that was pretty special. I live here in Albuquerque with my husband and our daughter. And it's a pretty special job and a special place to live. So really, really glad I ended up here.
Help your calves with digestive health and boost performance. By enhancing feed intake and supporting gut health, Digesterone Prime boosts your beef calves' immunity and growth while increasing profitability. Plus, it has no withdrawal periods, making it a smart choice for your feeding program. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime.
I am rarely like shocked or something. I'm not like first time I've ever had anybody on the show that I can remember that also rodeos. So this is a fun kind of worlds crossing type thing. And also was not expecting you to say that you had family members that moved to Hollywood to be in Western movies. So that was,
yeah, that's a special one. I always love to throw it in because it is. Yeah. And I'm, you know, proud of my family and proud of their the work they've done. It's fun. They, you know, my dad was in Tombstone and Silverado.
Oh,
and yeah, everybody's favorite movies. My dad was in. He was even in The Hangover. Not that that was a Western, but as you know, the movie industry evolved, they had to be good at other things. And so my dad's a specialist in driving cars and wrecks and all of that, and then also a fighting specialist. And so he was nominated for an Emmy for the TV show Community a long time ago.
Gosh.
Yeah, yeah. So very proud of my dad's work. And it's a really interesting family business. And then most of our friends are still in the business. And it's pretty sweet. It's a very unique thing and very fun thing. But yeah, we were always on that side of the cowboy culture and even, you know, even always scared to call myself a cowgirl in a lot of ways, right? Because I knew we were like the Hollywood and then we were rodeo cowgirls, and I knew there was real ranching cowgirls out there. But, you know, turn of events and the way the world works, I think it's okay to call ourselves cowgirls.
I think so. This just keeps getting more and more interesting.
Yeah.
Tombstone and Hangover could not be on more opposite ends of the spectrum.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Like those are different in every single way in terms.
Absolutely. If you look him up on IMDb, it's pretty fun to see the differences. You know, of course he'd love to be on Westerns all the time.
Yeah.
And nowadays there are a lot of Westerns. And so there is that opportunity, to be a cowboy on the TV, thanks to people like Taylor Sheridan and stuff writing more Westerns. But he's been in a lot of random stuff. I think from like zombies to thrillers to, anything to Spanish novellas. He's been on a lot of different things. His IMDb, which is where you look up like movie people, mm-hmm. is pretty extensive. It's neat. So I didn't quite follow in his footsteps. A lot of actresses are much smaller than me in height and everything. And so being a 5'10" woman, I was not destined to be a stunt woman necessarily.
Well, that is, I will have to look him up on IMDb because I like this. I think this episode has catapulted to the front very quickly. Exciting, interesting, very quickly to the beginning. So, well, that is quite the life story, career, you know, that you've had so far. But I know now that you're at the New Mexico Beef Council, you've been at some other agricultural related places. We're at the New Mexico Beef Council. You are their executive director. And so just maybe share with us, what are some of the exciting things that you've been doing at the Beef Council there in New Mexico?
Absolutely. Well, one of the most eye-catching kind of exciting things is we have a hot air balloon that says Beef It's What's for Dinner. And so as the State Beef Council, we have the opportunity to extend that national brand, Beef It's What's for Dinner, that National Cattlemen's kind of manages in Denver. We're able to extend it in our state. And so we chose that because we thought that means a lot more on a hot air balloon, on a flying billboard. And so it also has our New Mexico Zia approved by the Pueblo of Zia here in New Mexico. It has New Mexico Tastes of Tradition, which is our Department of Ag logo, and then our Beef Council logo on it too. And so it's really special. Ballooning is a huge part of New Mexico culture. It's the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta is our largest public event in the state, I think it's safe to say. And so people from all over the world come. And so as a New Mexico Beef Council, if we're going to market, we should be at the largest event in our state. And the best way to be there is with a balloon. And so we have a pilot contracted that has helped us through the process. It's a beautiful, beautiful balloon and really neat to connect with New Mexicans. And honestly, at the fiesta, the amount of ranchers and beef industry folks that sort of find us and come to us. And I've been saying it's the beacon of beef. Everybody just comes to us and says, wow, this is so cool to see my industry represented and at such a big event. And so, yeah, it's been really special. It was in Nashville at CattleCon. And then it's been all over New Mexico, a lot of places. It was in Las Cruces. It was in Gallup. So we've tried to take it around the state. We've got some places it'll go this summer. But so the hot air balloon is one thing. We also have our podcast you mentioned, I think, earlier, Behind the Burger. That's been a really great way to tell ranchers' stories. So it's typically an interview with a rancher. We have a couple coming up that are a little different. We have one with a chef where we were cooking. We're in the kitchen while recording the podcast. So I'm still nervous about the audio on that one, but just trying to find ways to, yeah. I hope the sizzles sound good. That's the goal always in the Beef Council world. And you always have to have a good sizzle. So we have our podcast where we tell rancher stories. That's been really special and really neat to, connect with consumers in a way that tells the multi-generation stories. It talks about the passion and the love for the land. Because, you know, if we're not telling our story, then who is, right? And so giving ranchers that platform, I think one of the ranchers said their biggest challenge was telling their story. And I think we had a negative comment on the podcast that said, or on the clip on social media that said, what do you mean talking is the hardest thing you do? That's silly. And it's like, no, talking is the hardest thing we do because people like that commenter are going to criticize and the platforms aren't always out there. And for a rancher to create a podcast and buy the equipment and do all of the stuff, they don't have time for that. Or, you know, some of them do, and that's great, but not every rancher can do that. And so to me, it's really special in that comment. Is exactly, yes, that's exactly why the Beef Council is giving them a platform to tell their story and then even protect them when criticism comes, that we're getting the criticism and not them. And so I'm really proud of the podcast and really excited about it and hope it continues to grow. Hope we continue to get better. And then I think the last thing I would mention is it's springtime. So we've been in a lot of schools. We've been talking to groups of elementary students in assemblies and, you know, small groups. And then we've been in high school culinary classrooms, teaching them how to cook beef, but always trying to be around youth and encouraging the positive story around ranching, the importance of ranching to the New Mexico's economy, the ability for any of those kids in that room to become ranchers one day or to work on a ranch, and just trying to inspire that it is a really important part of our state. And then also the culinary classes showing them it's not that hard to cook beef, right? You can cook beef and not be scared to buy at a higher price point and ruin it because here's some instructions and here's some, you know, fail safes on how to cook beef that encourages you to choose it next time. Cause we know it wins on flavor. So we've just got to lower some barriers to entry, remind people to buy it. And we think they'll keep buying it.
A lot. That's just a few things, but that sounds like a lot. The hot air balloon thing is so cool. I had no idea that that was such a big, component in New Mexico.
It's huge in New Mexico.
Yeah, that's so cool. But what a great idea on the part of the Beef Council to like embed yourself into that community and create connections with people who you may not talk to, you know, otherwise. That's wonderful. I did not see it at Nashville. Where was it?
So where the registration was and those big glass windows, we were outside in a parking lot. And it's very weather dependent. So some mornings didn't work out. But we were up on, I want to say Tuesday.
Were you going like up, taking people for rides and stuff?
No, just a static display. Display. We were just standing there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll send you pictures so you can see it. But it was really great. So it was just a static display. And then I kind of joked, we were basically like in a balloon aquarium because everybody is walking by in the glass windows and they would just look at us and take pictures, but nobody would come out. I understand it's cold, but I think also because ballooning is, which it is called ballooning in New Mexico, is such a part of our culture, we know how to interact with balloons. And so you go up to the basket, you take pictures. They usually have like something to hand you in a basket. In Nashville, everybody was like, oh, that's great, beautiful. And they like went about their day. And so we're still like teaching people, no, you can come interact with the balloon. You can see the flames. And you know, we always have trading cards. And sometimes we have balloon pins. Pin trading, like lapel pin trading, is a really big deal in the balloon culture. And so, yeah, so it was fun, but it was also very cold in Nashville. So
it was rainy and stuff a couple of days.
So. Yeah. And you can't put the balloon up in the rain and you can't put the balloon up in the wind. Cause it is pretty hard to control on the ground, especially in the wind. But yeah, it was really neat. And NCBA had invited us to be there, to show producers, one of the ways beef councils are working, checkoff dollars are working. And then also because we were in downtown Nashville right next to the big hockey stadium. So we're also reaching consumers, which was really neat. So
I did not know that Nashville, I'm writing all these things. I'm like taking notes about
stuff. I love it.
And I did not know that there was a hockey team in Nashville until one night. I don't know what it was. See, I got there on Sunday. So maybe like Tuesday night, I went down to a watering hole and like, I was like, where are all these people coming from? And then someone turned and I was like, they had like is it the Predators or something? I don't know. Anyway, I know it was yellow, but that's all I remember. And I was like, oh, there was a hockey game. And then I got it. So I had that's not where I would have envisioned a hockey team being in Nashville.
Right. No. And I'm learning more about hockey. Actually, Albuquerque is getting our first hockey team.
Oh, cool.
And it's a feeder team for the Colorado Avalanche. We're called the Goatheads, the Albuquerque Goatheads, which is really cute. And they voted on it in the community. And actually, Beef Council is going to be Beef It's What's for Dinner is going to be on the front of their jersey. Speaking of hockey and something else the Beef Council is doing, we're really excited about that, too. But yeah, other than that, my hockey knowledge ends there.
I have no hockey knowledge, so you are far, far, far ahead of me. But that is very cool. I'd love just to see all the ways that beef councils like find ways to engage in their community instead of like, I'm always a sucker for like a good ranch tour. Like I've actually been on a dairy ranch tour in, I think I was in New Mexico, to be completely honest. But I love seeing work like what you're doing and your beef councils doing, like, you're not waiting for people to come to you in your comfort zone. Like y'all are going into places where grocery shoppers are, hockey games, the arena or the balloon community, like a podcast that's readily available. Like these are all great, like ingenious ideas to get people to learn more about where their beef and the people who raise it. I just love all this work that you're doing. I'm so glad to have you on the show to talk about it today. This is great.
Thank you. Yeah. And the credit goes a lot to my board, right? I have a nine person board of beef and dairy producers. They are open to new ideas, bringing exciting ideas, and we're trying. And my chairman, Sarah Fitzgerald, likes to say, we don't need to doctor the healthy calves. So we don't need to be talking about beef to beef people. We need to doctor the sick calves, and we need to be with the people that aren't as familiar with ranching, aren't as familiar with choosing beef or anything like that. So that's where we try and be in the communities. And sometimes I know that makes it a challenge because it's ranchers' dollars. And so they want to know where we're spending and they want to see us spending their money and see it. It's hard for them to see it because they're the healthy calves. Right.
Yeah.
And so they might not see it, but we are in the community, in the places where people aren't getting the information. And then that comes down to trying to tell them what we're doing. Right. So being at the cattlemen's events and stuff and trying to talk about ourselves, which is the hardest thing in the world to do in some ways. Right.
Yes, absolutely. I remember long ago, like forever. I honestly don't remember how long ago, maybe it's like 13 years, something like that. I worked for NCBA and the beef checkoff, and we would constantly get messages and emails from people saying like, where's the Sam Elliott commercials on TV? Like, why am I not seeing all these beef? Why don't I see beef advertisements on TV? And why don't I see beef, it's what's for dinner advertisements in my Cattleman's magazine. And like, we were constantly harping on them. Like, if you are seeing beef, it's what's for dinner ads, and we're doing our job poorly because you don't need to see them. You are already eating beef multiple times a week. You are not the target audience. And so that was always a fight trying to convince them that like, we're not trying to spend your money, use your and mine money as well. As we are both beef producers, we're not trying to spend our hard earned dollars and checkoff dollars on advertising to people that already eat beef. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You get it. Yeah.
I like your board member's phrase. We don't need to doctor the healthy calves. Like, I think that that's a wonderful, that's a really good way of saying it, but a good switch up on regular. So,
yeah.
So let's talk a little bit. I mean, we've talked about some of the really great work you're doing in the New Mexico Beef Council, but just in general, could you talk about the importance of beef councils and maybe like their role? Like, what is the role of a beef council? And you don't need to go back to like the act and the order and like how they started and stuff, but like, what is the core role of a beef council and like, why are they important?
Absolutely. So beef councils, our main job is promotion, education, and research. So those are the three things we focus on. We represent ranchers where they can't be, right? You've got things to do. You've got places to be, cattle to sell. You got to be at the sale barn, or you got to be, you know, breaking ice in the winter or whatever you got to do. We're paid to be in the places that you can't be. And so we're at community events. We're at schools. We are trying to always break down barriers to entry of beef, telling the story. We're on social media now too, a lot. And the importance is to create demand, right? To create and maintain demand. Beef demand is at all-time highs right now. Mm-hmm. In fact, the prices are even driven by high demand. People are choosing beef, continuing to choose beef. And a lot of that is we try and encourage it as beef councils to continue or to get people to continue to choose beef. So one of the, you know, stories we all love to tell, which maybe it's been told too many times, is consumers were saying, they do a lot of consumer research, and consumers were saying beef was too tough in the 90s, right? So then we started breeding cattle for more marbling and breeding and feeding cattle for more marbling, and realizing that consumers like tender beef. And so we do a lot of consumer research and just really trying to focus on how can we provide a safe, high quality product and remind people that it is a safe, high quality and delicious product. And so, yeah, that's kind of the role of beef councils. But yeah, our favorite way to say it is we're going to be in places that a rancher can't be because they don't have time. And so while you focus on raising high quality cattle, choosing the genetics you want, choosing your feed or your pasture program or your technology that's going to help you be a better rancher, we're going to spend time thinking about the consumer and doing the marketing work for you. And even some of my board members like to say that dollar, that, you know, $1 per animal sold. And in New Mexico, it's $2.
Oh, great.
With some, you know, complicating factors. But it's about $2. And so $1.50 comes to New Mexico Beef Council, 50 cents goes national. That amount is lower than any percentage you're going to pay for marketing on your own, right? A lot of times people are paying 20 to 30% of their income on marketing. And that $1 is typically much less, right? And so, especially the price of cattle.
Yeah.
So it's a getting some really good bang for your buck, and also pooling those dollars in, you know, what's kind of like a marketing agency is going to be the best use of it, right? And so we hope that we're doing a good job. We aim to serve ranchers. We aim to keep them happy. And I even like to call people that aren't as supportive or don't like the beef councils or don't like the checkoff. I love to call them and have those conversations. Those are my favorite conversations because I understand it's your money. I'm not going to tell you how to spend it. What I am going to do is try and tell you how I'm spending it, right? And how, because you deserve to know what we're doing with your money. And so I love to have a conversation. Totally. I'd put my cell phone on the podcast if that didn't seem weird. It does seem a little weird. But I love talking to producers.
I'm just going to advise you not to do that.
Yeah, 100%.
You're going to have an opportunity to send people to a landing spot or something like that. But please don't put your phone number on this podcast.
100%. But I want to be open. If a rancher has a question, even a criticism, please call, especially a criticism. We don't succeed in an echo chamber always, right? We need to hear criticism. We need to hear new ideas. So I'm completely open to it, and I've got pretty thick skin. Well, I have worked cattle and team roped with my husband for a long time.
There you go. You were talking about the cost of marketing, and I always, when I ever come up against detractors, which I do quite often, I always liken it to like, okay, you have 100 head of cattle. I'm not talking about you specifically, Carolyn. I'm talking to like to this hypothetical rancher who's mad at me. So this hypothetical rancher has 100 head of cattle, and they want to sell, you know, they want to promote their ranch, and their checkoff contribution in Kansas is $100. You cannot buy a quarter page ad in a magazine for $100, but the checkoff pooling all the dollars from that guy and this lady and that lady can move it, make so much more happen collectively by using those dollars in a more strategic way. We're stronger together than we are nitpicking at each other and pulling each other apart. And so I always try to find analogies. That's like, you can't fly to your state's capital. Or I'm trying to think, I mean, I don't know the state capital, like how far people are from the state capital of New Mexico. But like, my point is a flight is like $500. And if your yearly checkoff contribution is $100, like, what are you going to get to promote your ranch that's worth more than that $100?
I agree. It's very much pooling dollars makes more bang for our buck. And, you know, not every organization is it as visible, right? So you're giving us money. Well, you know, I don't always get a say or get to know exactly where my tax dollars go, or it'd be pretty hard to figure out sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, all of those things. But the Beef Council dollars, we're putting out monthly newsletters to tell you how we're spending your money. We're at cattlemen's events giving our report card. We are an open book. We want you to know how we're spending our money. And so that's another thing too, is if you have an idea, either we might already be doing it or we might try it for you, right? And so as a producer, you have a voice in what the New Mexico Beef Council does. We serve New Mexico ranchers. We want to do right by you. We want you to be proud of the work we're doing. So absolutely, we hope that we're consolidating and making great financial choices, and you have a say in it.
Yes, absolutely. And that's just another point. We keep like going back to this, like the novelty, but the importance of checkoff is like, anybody can go and see where those dollars are being spent. That, you know, that's online. You're putting out newsletters. I live in Kansas. I know the Kansas Beef Council does a great job of putting out newsletters. On the national level, the National Checkoff provides reports on what money is allocated to which contractor, and you can see how much money is spent on specific tactics and projects and initiatives. And like, it's all there for people to look at. You might just have to put in a little work, you know, click around a few times to find it. And so, again, I have strong feelings. I very rarely am someone who is like indifferent about things or doesn't have a strong feeling about something. But I just feel so strongly about the purpose of the checkoff and the validity of the goal of them. And so I just strongly encourage people to, if you feel negative feelings about a checkoff, I challenge you to actually look into how the money is being spent. And
thank you. I love it. That's great. No, it's perfect. I think there's even research that says most people that look into what the checkoff is doing or what your state beef council is doing then become a supporter.
Yeah, I did not know that, but I would love to know more about. I'd love to have that, like when we're offline, if I could have that fact, I would love to have that.
Yeah, the more you know, the more we hope you are actually supportive and realize what we're doing. Even when I call people, they go, "Oh, you're in schools?" Absolutely, we're in schools. We're trying daily to be in schools. I spent 8 days and 2 weeks or something in schools. And so absolutely, absolutely. So we're happy to share information, and thank you for your support and for so many people that do support, including, you know, board members, where we are led by producers. So that's an important fact too.
Well, I, like I said, very pro checkoff.
Thank you.
well, just lastly here, I'd just like to kind of wrap up the beef demand and beef price, like, well, we're not wrapping up the beef prices conversation. We haven't really started that, but we're running out of time. But like from a consumer's perspective, when you're at grocery stores or at your, the balloon events in the balloon community or at a school talking to teachers or, you know, you're talking to chefs, what kind of feeling are you getting from consumers about beef prices and how it's affecting their shopping? We know beef demand is at an all-time high or is continuing to grow. So like what kind of feeling and feedback are you getting from consumers as you're out there at these different events in different places?
Yeah. So the truth is that the numbers don't lie, right? Beef demand is growing. People are still choosing beef. Anecdotally, and you know, a small percentage of conversations go towards beef prices. Where we try and point consumers is that, you know, there's a cut for every price point, right? So you can buy, you know, a chuck roast and cook once, enjoy twice, and you can buy ground beef and add it into, you know, as an ingredient. And so we're always trying to push consumers to see the broad spectrum. If price is an issue, trying to buy those lower cost cuts. But yeah, sometimes people are talking about it, but they're still choosing it, right? So they're still, and even them, there's even the ones that say, oh yeah, it's so hard. Well, but I, you know, I am still buying it, you know? And so it comes down to the money is where it matters, right? People are still buying beef. Of course, there's conversations. And again, we just try and point consumers to choose what fits their budget. Like I said, a chuck roast is a great thing. Or even people now, there's a lot of popular cuts that are more affordable. The tri-tip, the picanha, right? Those kind of things that are still a delicious and unique way to enjoy beef, but maybe a little less expensive than the, you know, the Hollywood cuts, the ribeyes and your filet mignon and all that. So I think that's kind of the conversation we try and have with consumers.
I love that. Like just being creative with your grocery budget and maybe changing the way you consume beef. We love, my daughters call it tri-top, but
yes,
tri-tip is what it's called. But we will buy a tri-tip roast. And I don't know how many people do this, but we actually cut it into steaks. Because if you cook that over charcoal on meat, cook it over charcoal to meat rare, oh my gosh, it is, I would put that up against any ribeye. It's so tender. It's flavorful. We had tri-top last night. We took a big old tri-top roast. And again, I'm saying tri-top because I'm like conditioned by my 9-year-old and 4-year-old.
Yes.
But our tri-tip roast for consumer education, it's a tri-tip roast and we cut it into steaks and it is so good grilled over charcoal to me. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, on the podcast with our chef, she cut the tri-tip into steaks and then cut the tenderloin into steaks. And just to show different, you know, a really expensive version and then a more affordable version and just showing the differences. Of course, you know, tenderness and stuff, the tenderloin might've won a little bit. But either way, they're just delicious options. And I grab a tri-tip far more than I grab any other cut of beef. It's a favorite for us. I pop it in the oven for 30, or I do a little sear in my Dutch oven on the stove and then pop it in the oven for 25, 30 minutes. And it's delicious. It's quick. You can put it on a salad. You can put it in a quesadilla later. You can do, do the cook once, dine twice with a tri-tip. It's we're big fans of that one. Absolutely.
It's wonderful. I've never had it as a roast. Never.
Yeah.
We always eat it as a steak, but, and then the other thing that I wanted, you were talking about the demand and I just wanted to bring up like people moving their budget around is I sat in on a webinar a couple weeks ago with Stratovation Group and Inspire, which some like research, like consumer research. And I just was remembering this fact, but like when grocery budgets tighten for consumers, like they listed what things they were cutting, you know? So like the first thing they cut, 47% were cutting alcohol. Second thing that cut, 40% were cutting gourmet items. Third thing was like 39% or something, restaurants, you know, cut down on eating out, followed by seafood, and then sweets and treats and candy. And then like the sixth thing that they start cutting is beef. So yes, people are going to, will start cutting some of those like higher cuts out, but like, look at all the stuff that they're cutting in order to avoid cutting beef, right? They're going to cut out alcohol, going out to eat, seafood, candy or coffee, or, you know, their cake pops or whatever it is. I love a good cake pop, but like they're going to cut out all of those things before they start to think about cutting out beef. And I think that's a really great testament to beef's flavor, beef's flexibility to be so many things. I think that's a wonderful testament to just what how far our industry has come from, you know, like in the 80s, where you could not get the same eating experience from two different sirloin steaks, to now hopefully like you go buy a ribeye at the grocery store and then do it again the week after and the week after, and like you're getting the same eating experience. So I think it's a great testament to how beef producers across the nation have reacted to that consumer feedback, saying like we want consistent, well marbled, tender, flavorful beef. And as beef producers, we did it. So just wanted to add that to the conversation because you were talking about people like kind of cutting things.
I think it's great. I think that's another message we try and talk about, is when you're talking about protein quality per dollar, beef should be at the top of the list, right? And yeah, so all absolutely. Of the things that beef has, you know, essential nutrients, zinc, iron, protein, they're significant sources. So all of those things that beef is also really good for you. So if you're going to cut things, maybe don't cut the one that's good for you.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And luckily that's not happening, right? I think consumers are still choosing beef, and hopefully will continue to do so.
I think they will. Just a reminder to our... I will too. Just a reminder to our audience, if you're enjoying this episode of the Beef Podcast presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family.
It's time for our famous three.
Tired of the 21-day shot show? Stop hitting the cortisol hornet's nest with a wiffle ball bat every time you wean, transport, commingle, do shoot work, or experience Mother Nature's mood swings with weather. The cortisol surge can't be stopped, but it can be proactively controlled. QFA 2000 is a proactive approach to reducing the risk of BRD in calves. QFA 2000 reduces the use of antimicrobials, improves innate immune function, and allows the calf to do what it's meant to do, efficiently gain weight. For less than half the cost of antimicrobials, you can take a proactive, hands-off approach with your calves. Control the 21-day cortisol surge and control your drug costs with QFA 2000. For more information, contact us at applied-biotechnologies.com.
Carolyn, we have got to, I'm so sorry. I would love to keep talking. I could talk to you about beef and the checkoff and production and all these other things for like an hour or more, but we've got to start wrapping this up and get to our closing questions, which I gave you kind of a heads up on these earlier in the show, but we ask these same three questions of every guest. And the first one is, what is your favorite beef or cattle related resource? It could be the checkoff. It could be a book, a recipe book. It could be a website. It could be a person. But your favorite beef or cattle related resource. It could be your dad, the actor, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think people are my favorite resource. I think other ranchers that have helped us, that answer my text when we had a bottle calf and we didn't know what to do. That's a favorite, right? When it comes to our personal first generation ranching journey. Other ranchers, Jim Armandades is a friend, and he has been the kind of friend that you can text and ask all kinds of silly questions. And he's trying to teach us how to be digital cowboys and use technology to our advantage. So yeah, I think other ranchers, when it comes to our ranching journey, when it comes to in the industry, I'm a big fan of New Mexico cattle growers. I've also learned a lot from our New Mexico Livestock Board, partnering with them. So those are favorite resources. But yeah, the people, you know, it's those relationships, it's those friendships. In fact, working in the industry and being around those people is what inspired my husband and I to join the ranks and purchase a ranch in the last 45 days. And so, yeah, so we joined because the people, it's so hard to beat. I mean, even people, like you said, we could talk for hours and we didn't even talk about rodeo. And so there's so many things that
you have to come back.
Yeah. 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 So I'd love that. But yeah, it's just, you have that people resource to me is the best. It's the best.
Yeah, I agree. There's, you know, it's hard to put you don't ever want to like put a monetary value on a person, but like, the people in the industry are invaluable. Absolutely. And congratulations on purchasing on a ranch. That's a big step.
Yeah, I had to slip that in there. Sorry.
Yeah, they did.
We are pretty proud.
We will have to have you back on for sure. So next is, what is your favorite non-beef or cattle related book or one that you're currently reading? So even if you're not reading a lot right now, there's a favorite book you've had in the past.
Yeah. So I know I don't read a lot of books. I do listen to some podcasts and get a lot of information from social media. I was going to say one of my favorite things that's not a book, but is a form of media would be the Let's Freaking Rodeo podcast. I'm a big fan of that. So I'm not really answering your question. I'm trying to be a politician because I really don't read books. I'm the worst. I used to love a Nicholas Sparks book. Used to love a love story. And then now I like to say I loved love stories until I had my own. And now I'm like, I don't need to read those.
That's fun.
Yeah. But other than that, I try to listen to other podcasts. I was trying to think of a non-beef one. I do love the Let's Freaking Rodeo one. Those guys are pretty entertaining.
That's great. It is entertaining. We didn't get into rodeo, but I'm either going to have to come on your podcast or you're going to have to come back on this one so we can talk about that. But I save up all my favorite podcasts for summer. So like, I don't listen to podcasts from like October through April. I don't listen to podcasts. I save them all up to listen to them. So like Serial, the only podcast I listen to during the off season is the New Heights podcast. And the Let's Let's Freaking Rodeo one. I just listened to, I listened to Haley Kinsel's recently, and I love Lisa Lockhart's episode. And I just listened to Herbert. I don't know how to say Herbert Terrio. Is it Terrio? I should know this, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'm not going
to
try.
I just listened to his and it was hilarious. So.
I loved the Gilbert brothers?
I haven't listened to that one.
Oh, my gosh. They're hilarious. They're twin brothers that were bull riders. Oh, my gosh. We were laughing so hard.
I probably don't listen to the Ruffy ones very often, to be completely honest.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the Gilbert brothers. Is it Gilbert? I might be saying. No, Carrillo. Sorry. The Carrillo brothers. I think one of the brothers' names might be Gilbert. The Carrillo brothers. Oh, my gosh. It's a great one. It's so funny. They're just the coolest guys. And I guess they were NFR bull riders in the 80s, 90s, maybe. I think it's Carrillo. And so funny. It came out around CattleCon and we drove the balloon to CattleCon and we listened it on the way. So,
well, I'll have to look that one up because I do love me some that I do love that podcast. And they just got a free shout out. So,
okay. There you go. Sorry.
That's all right. No big deal. It's all right. There's crossover. And so the last one is, when you think of someone you admire or look up to, what is a characteristic they possess that has led them to be successful? That you don't have to tell us the name of the person if you don't want to, but the characteristic that certain people or a person has inspired you and helped them to be successful.
Yeah, I really think vulnerability and courage were the two words that I wrote down. And sometimes that's the courage to be vulnerable, right? To admit when you made a mistake, to admit when you don't know, and that kind of humility that comes with being vulnerable and courageously vulnerable. And so I think that's what I look up to when people will just be honest too and say, yeah, we tried that and we fell on our butts. And I think that's something I really look up to, and people being honest when we ask questions, whether it's ranching or beef council, and they say, yeah, we don't know how to do that. And just, admitting that it's okay. We don't have to be perfect robots that, have this perfect answer and know everything of what we're doing. It's okay to be, learning as we go and be honest with that. So I think that, and even the ability to laugh through it, right? To whether it's self-deprecating laughter or just, knowing that we'll figure it out in the end, but laughing through it, that's a favorite of mine too. If I can call a mentor and we can laugh about the cows that I can't find or the cows that walked 4 miles and they were supposed to only walk a mile a day. That's my favorite. So
no, that's okay. The vulnerability one, I think that's really important because that makes you more relatable to people and people feel more comfortable talking to you. So I'm on totally on board with you on that one. You don't need me to be on board with you with these, but I am.
I do. As a human, I really do. Thank you.
Well, I have so enjoyed having you on the show today, Carol Ann. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your knowledge with us. That is all the questions. It's not all the questions, but it is the time that we have for today. If listeners have questions for you or want to learn more about our discussion today, where can they do that?
Yeah, so we are on all social media, or most all social media, especially Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at NM Beef. I think Facebook's it's NM Beef Council. We have our Behind the Burger podcast, and then our website is nmbeef.com. And we would love to have you follow along on social media. We've got clips from our podcast so you can get a little taste of it. And hope you check us out.
I have just put all that I've been typing while you were talking. I put that all in the footnotes of where our followers and audience can find you on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, on nmbeef.com, and then behind the burger podcast, right?
Behind the Burger, yep.
So I'll try to tell
the story behind the beef on your burger.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you again, Carol Ann, for being here today. To our listeners, thank you for being here. And to be sure to check out the Behind the Burger podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for being here and for tuning in. And we'll meet you back here next week on the Beef Podcast presented by Wisenetics.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.